you're going to get some reward by carrying on all this thinking, thinking, thinking. You're under the impression if you think enough, you can solve all your problems. How many of you have solved all your problems? And you've been thinking for so many years. And you're smart people. You know, little Sadama was a lawyer. Incredibly smart thinker. He's a US lawyer. What was your field, Sadama? Is it criminal law or environmental law?
Torts, insurance defense.
Insurance. Wow, you really have to be smart. So, you know, she was a super duper thinker. And it's, you know, some of these philosophers which, you know, you meet from time to time when you go give talks in universities. Wow, they've read so many books. You go into their studies, and I've actually read those books. You go into my room, most of the books on there I've never read, but they look impressive. These guys are really great thinkers, but are they wise? Where does all that thinking get you? It just goes around in circles after a while. So what we're doing here, we're trying to take the value away from thinking. Unfortunately, it was all your school teachers and professors. They're the ones to blame. Because they told you, come on, think. And I think I remember, or maybe I'm just making this up, but I'm sure it would have happened, that once I was in school, maybe the first year, grade one or its equivalent, and a teacher looked at me and said, what do you think about that? And I said, nothing. Stupid boy, stupid boy. And from that moment on, I lost my ability to meditate. You don't have to think about things. And in fact, you know, you can probably be much wiser. Look, one of the stories. If anybody finds out who this monk was, because I remember hearing about him when I was a young monk, first few years in Thailand. And, you know, it's such a long time ago now, and I've forgotten, you know, who the monk was. But he was supposed to be this young boy in a village in northeast Thailand. And every person in those days in northeast Thailand had to do 4 years of school. That was all. Even Ajahn Chah only did 4 years. Incredibly intelligent guy. But this fellow, this boy, after 1 year in grade one, his teacher had to fail him. I don't know how you can fail grade one. Maybe, you know, the stick drawings were all over the place. Maybe, you know, he didn't know how to do plasticine work. I don't know. I don't know how you can fail grade one, but he failed. So he had to repeat grade one. All his friends went on to grade two, and he had to stay behind. Second year, he failed again. Now, this guy is in the Guinness Book of Records of being stupid. 2 years, he failed grade one. And the third year, they really tried hard to get him, because all his friends were going along, school doing well, but he failed grade two twice. So the third year they gave extra special attention. And with the best will in the world, they could not pass him. Three times he failed grade one, so that was out of school. Now that really takes something to fail grade one. 3 years in a row. So, what did they do with him next? Obviously they thought he was so stupid, waste of time, you know, trying to sort of be a farmer, which is what most of the kids would eventually end up doing. So there's only one thing they would do for someone who was that young and stupid, and that was to ordain him as a novice in the local monastery. So in those days, those little temples you used to see in, you know, Sri Lanka and Thailand and Burma and all over Southeast Asia. Yeah, they were there for, you know, monks, nuns meditating. They're also there as like a social service. You know, kids without homes, orphans, people who, for one reason or another, ran out of money and they had nowhere else to go. They could always go to the temple. And it was at everything. It was a school, it was an orphanage, it was a hostel, old people's home. You know, it served all those purposes, whatever the community wanted. So anyway, they sent this, you know, dummy to the monastery, ordained him as a novice. And the poor guy, you know, he couldn't even remember Namo Tassa. You know, what was that second word again? Namo something or other. He couldn't learn anything. But in those temples, you know, sometimes, as a young monk, I was always taught, oh, you know, those are just village temples. They're not real monks. They don't keep the rules. But there's so many kind people in those monasteries. And I've seen these very kind old abbots. Yeah, they may have a television in their room, but they're incredibly compassionate. They really look after and help other people. So I respect them for that. And so I had one of these very kind abbots who really worked hard with this young kid. But you know, after 2 or 3 years, even the abbot just gave up. You know, this guy was just, you know, too hard. Couldn't learn anything. And you know, be a monk, you have to remember some things. You have to do some chanting. At least give the 5 precepts. He couldn't do any of that. So the last resort, the place where they send the ones we can send, which they can't even last in a monastery in the village, was send them to the forest monasteries, which is where I come from. But it doesn't mean that all the monks who go to forest monasteries are stupid. But this guy was. And the teacher, instead of teaching him Namo Tassa or how to chant, the teacher just taught him some meditation. Just follow the breath. And this fellow's mind was just so clear and so peaceful. He could do that easily. He could meditate for hours. And in a couple of years, he became fully enlightened. And the story I heard, he could actually do his duties as a monk, you know, by doing the chanting, but in a very strange way. You may believe this or not, but this is what I heard, that he could recall his previous lives, and recall a life, you know, not so long ago, where he had been a monk before, where he could learn the chanting, and he actually connected with that previous life, where he did know the chanting, to be able to chant in this life. He sort of channeled the chanting from the previous life, because in this life he couldn't learn anything. His mind was so simple and peaceful. And he became totally enlightened. He didn't have any trouble with thinking. That made him stupid at school, but brilliant as a meditator. So all of you who really, you know, stuffed up at school, you are great meditators. Come here. All of those of you who got degrees, like me, we're, you know, really, you know, we're behind the eight ball. So the reason is that some of these people, you know, they value the silence much more than the thinking. And because people value the silence more than the thinking, especially on retreats, whatever you value the most, you're inclined towards. What do you have for breakfast this morning? I had so much on offer. What you valued the most is what you chose and what you put in your mouth. So why did you choose that? Because you thought it was, you know, tasty, delicious, and good for your health. So look, are thoughts good for your health? Are they tasty, or are they torturing? They're certainly not good for your health. You know that, because they send you crazy sometimes. So after a while, when we change our value systems, we can look at all that thinking and say, no, not now. It's not going to get me anywhere. I'm just going to drop it, take away its value, and instead value silence. In English, they say that silence is golden. And I checked in the newspapers, people tell me the gold price is increasing every day. So silence is even more valuable than it was last time I taught a retreat. So, why can't we value silence instead of valuing thoughts? So, I will now show you what I mean. This is what I call a meditating teacher's trick. One of the skillful means